Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it! It's time to Double Down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talk to Amir Taki. But first, George Orwell wrote, "War is a way of shattering to pieces materials which might otherwise be used to make the masses too comfortable and too intelligent." Remember that as we enter our third, or is it our fourth decade of never-ending war in the Middle East, because we've always been at war with the Middle East, Asia. Haven't we, Stacy?
You get that? That's very clever. Instead of being always at war with East Asia, it's Middle East Asia.
Oh, fantastic. Very Orwellian.
Well, of course, we know there are so many multiple fronts on this war on terror, as they call it, or war against the Middle East. And one of the things I've noticed over the past year or two or three was that once we overthrew Gaddafi, of course, ISIS managed to have some oil fields to finance their operations. Fighting ISIS in Syria have been the Kurds. And I want to talk about their whole economic platform because our guest, Amir Taki, has been down there in Syria with them, helping them devise an economic policy. But before we get to that, I want to turn to this headline from Fox News only just a few weeks ago. Social justice warriors jump into Kurdish-Syrian struggle. Scores of military-minded Westerners have flocked to the Kurdish-dominated enclave of Syria in recent years, armed and ready to defeat the jihadist threat that is the Islamic State. But while many are there to blast and burn the enemy, many too have descended for reasons more akin to those of Burning Man participants, to take part in a socialism-rooted communal and ideological revolution. One war photographer, Jake Simkin, told Fox News that most of the foreign volunteers join for social justice reasons. There are Brooklyn hipsters who love the idea of communism and are into working on the law side and governance of Rojava.
Oh, that's where all the Occupy protesters went. So, well, you know, our guest is always ahead of the trend, isn't he?
Well, it's time now to turn to Amir Taki to find out more. He's a hacker programmer, all-around interesting guy who had a leading role in the development of Bitcoin and has now returned to a squat in London from Rojava, where he not only fought ISIS but talked some economic ideas to the people of Rojava, or Rojava, as I say. I pronounce it the Spanish way sometimes. So, Amir Taki, first, tell the audience about Rojava. Who are they? What are they? What drew you to this fight?
Hello. It's really nice to talk to you guys again. And so, Rojava is... There's a lot of oppressed people around the world, like fighting for their self-determination, and it's not about Kurds or this group or that group. Like, honestly, I don't really care about any one group of people. It's about the politics. It's about the ideas that we use to form nations and societies. And the Kurds have had like a long history of fighting for their self-determination in the Middle East, and they used to be a communist group. They used to be very communist. But then in the 90s, their leader got arrested and he went to prison. Went to prison for it. Like, he went to solitary confinement and he became an anarchist. He started reading anarchist literature. Started reading a guy called Murray Bookchin. And when you read his political philosophy, the guy's actually read a lot of things. Actually, and really made like a really incredible ideology, which is now the guiding principle behind the revolution in North Syria. So what happened is in Rojava is the most important revolution of this century. It is the only lasting anarchist revolution in history, in human history. And there was the Arab Spring, there was Occupy, there were all these movements where, you know, it also happened in the Iranian Revolution, it happened in Egypt, it happened in Syria, where a bunch of people went out into the streets and they're like, yeah, we're going to overthrow the government. Bunch of liberals basically flooded into the squares of all different places, and then they overthrew the government, and then people said, okay, now what? What next? And the people that came with a plan, with an idea of what to do next, were the Islamists, and they basically took over all of those revolutions. So now people in the West who are like, oh yeah, I'm anti-establishment, like for instance the Momentum people or the Jeremy Corbyn or kind of socialist groups, they don't have a plan. They don't really have an idea of like what they want to make. When you listen to them talk, they're still talking about the same things that people were talking about 50 years ago, that communists were talking about 50 years ago. I went to the Momentum meetings and they keep talking about the working class. It's like, guys, the working class doesn't even vote for you anymore. So what do we have in Syria? Syrian government imploded. The PKK, which is a guerrilla group that has been fighting against the Turkish government since nearly 30, 40 years in the mountains, been shaped by that struggle, has developed an anarchist ideology, a really contemporary anarchist ideology, crossed over into Syria, where there was a big power vacuum, struggled for power against other Islamist militias, managed to keep control of an area and start to mobilize the population to make a revolution. And why is it important to have an ideology and a philosophy in the society? Because when you have an ideology, people create new philosophy. It drives the population forward. It creates society. It creates values in the society. It gives people a sense of direction. That's like the biggest thing that I feel the difference going from Rojava to going to England. But our biggest problem in England is not about plain distribution of wealth. You know, it's not that, oh, this guy doesn't have the same amount of money as this guy. Actually, England is very wealthy, very wealthy. What we have is a crisis of meaning and purpose in the society. In Rojava, they have a revolution. Like, yeah, we're going to do this. And there's this sense of optimism. There's this sense of destiny that people are on a historic trajectory. And it's something that's completely missing from England. And it's very tragic. Yeah, you really feel the difference.
Yeah, Amir, you talk a little bit about the economy or economic model in Rojava, as you say. And you talk about it in terms of it being beyond anarchism. Can you describe that a little bit? What do you mean beyond anarchism?
So the problem with anarchism and, for instance, communism and other socialist philosophies is, like, I saw, for instance, Orwell, he wrote a review of Mein Kampf, and he said, communism and capitalism are offering the people a good time, whereas Hitler is offering people struggle and meaning and purpose. And it's kind of like, if we have a society which is lacking a higher belief or a higher sense of purpose, you know, something that people strive for, instead people just striving to accumulate for themselves, for their ego, that is capitalism. And it doesn't matter whether you call it communism or what form you give it, it still leads to hierarchy and bureaucracy. And the parallels of the society in the West now with the end days of ancient Rome are really striking. And in Rojava, it's really interesting because also they're organized in the economy in terms of cooperatives. So, for instance, in England, we tax people and it goes to a centralized apparatus. And then that money is distributed to corporations where people work as debt slaves, or is given as welfare to keep people on handouts. Whereas in Rojava, they're saying, okay, let's organize around local markets and get people to form their own businesses where they're self-sufficient using cooperative model, as opposed to having corporations and welfare, that we can construct a shared social economy.
The economic model that's developing there that you're assisting with, a little bit of a digression. When you talk about the country needing a sense of purpose, and you mentioned World War II and England and Germany. Of course, at that time, England was being bombed by Germany, and the country came together with a sense of purpose, and they created, as a result of this, something of a shared common values and the National Health Service, for example, the NHS. The argument now about whether to keep funding the NHS seems to be, curious what your observations are here, that momentary shared purpose of World War II is long ago ended. And England for 1,000 years was not about a shared purpose. It was about lords and serfs. So this argument with the NHS seems to be that NHS period is over, really. It's out of character. for them in England to even have an NHS. Your thoughts?
If we're going to talk about healthcare, I really think the thing that's lacking in England is not simply like a question of wealth. There's no sense of community. There's no sense of civil society. Like, how is it that in my mum's town, where I was under house arrest for half a year, I said to go and explore. I was like, okay, what is there actually happening in this town? There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing happening there. A small town in Syria, in a war, there's an art and culture center where people are making music, where people are making art. There's a municipality. There's a media center where people are working for different media organizations. The economic center. There's all different groups around. There's like an active civic life. You know, there's a sense of people striving, working for something greater than themselves. It's Western principle of, oh, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours, or, you know, treat others as you want to be treated. Like, it's kind of, you know, zero sum exchange.
Amir, you mentioned house arrest. We should bring that up and elaborate a little bit further for the audience. You were in Syria. You actually took up arms. You were fighting ISIS. You were there advising, as the Fox News had outlined, many Westerners have gone there to fight with the Kurds. The U.S. military is supporting the Kurds in Syria, just as they had supported the Kurds in Iraq. There is the awkward situation in that the United States does list the PKK as a terrorist organization. So tell us about what is your situation at the moment. They took your passport. You were over there fighting in Syria. What's going on with that?
No, I got my passport back. So it's fantastic news that I can leave England forever. I don't really want to come back to this country ever again. There's nothing left here. Like, Alexander Dugin, who is the ideological brains behind Russia, he says that there are basically two global conspiracies of the Atlanticists and Eurasianists. Eurasianists are all the land empires like Russia, which have always been based around like a strong system of positive values, always placed politics above economy. Whereas the Atlanticists, which is the like America and England, are like mercantilist island-based empires, which place economy above politics. So now, in the West, what we're facing today is not the same capitalism as 50 years ago. You know, 50 years ago, there were the oppressors and the dominated. Today, we live in a hegemony that's constantly shifting, that works through transfixing people with spectacle, through liquidation of all of the values in the society. And England is really the center of that, the center of pure ego-driven accumulation, breakdown of civil society, lack of a higher sense of spiritual or ideological or meaning, of people striving for something greater. And we need that as human beings. You can't deny obstacle and challenge, because through obstacle and challenge, we overcome, we develop, we grow, we become stronger, and we gain fulfillment in life. You know, it's not simply a matter of comfort. It's that striving, that trying to spread or grow our influence. Because what did man do when all the other animals evolved together with their surroundings in balance, whereas man, we make tools to exploit nature, to shape it to how we want it to be. And as human beings, that aim of our life is, you know, that striving for ambition, for achievement, to shape the world around us. And if we're not doing that as human beings, we're not fulfilling our role as human beings. And I think that is what people today are feeling is missing from their lives. That's why people are now being drawn to the rising neo-traditionalist movements in Europe, the neo-fascism. People are joining ISIS. And if you look at it, it's not like these things don't work in terms of logic. They're working based on emotion. They're working based on the symbolism, on the ideas. It's a very different, like we're entering a phase of imminent reversal, really. Like we're moving from a materialist to an ideological phase in the world.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Amir Attaki. Until next week. Bye, y'all.